I'm Marco Werman, and you're with The World. Glad you're with us on this Martin Luther King Jr. Day. We will be hearing several perspectives on Dr. King's civil rights activism and legacy, including what he means to immigrants and their struggles today. That's coming up later on the show. We begin by recalling a specific moment in Dr. King's life. March 21st, 1965, he helped lead a march from Selma to Montgomery, Alabama. There's a photo from that day of Dr. King flanked by two other leaders. On his right, one of the current congresspeople from Georgia, John Lewis, the target of some of Donald Trump's tweets this past weekend. On King's left, a rabbi named Abraham Joshua Heschel. Heschel was born in Poland. He lost several members of his family to the Holocaust, but he was able to escape and come to the U.S., where he became an activist. Susanna Heschel is his daughter. She's a professor of Jewish studies at Dartmouth College.
My father left for Selma with some anxiety because, as you know, a couple of weeks earlier, the marchers had attempted to go to Montgomery, and they were attacked and beaten bloody by the Alabama state troopers. And in fact, Congressman John Lewis, who was a young man at the time, was beaten over the head and his skull was fractured that day. It's known as Bloody Sunday. A few weeks later, the president called out federal troops to protect the marchers, and my father went to join them. But when he left that Saturday night, he kissed me goodbye, and I remember thinking, I don't know if I'll ever see him again. But my father came back from the march feeling that it was a religious event. He said, I felt my legs were praying.
So the movie Selma, Ava DuVernay's film, was criticized for omitting your father's part in that march. Why do you think it's important to remember that role? I mean, we learn that the fight for justice is simply a noble fight. You don't need to be recognized for it.
Well, I want to say two things about that. First of all, there were so many young Jews and also rabbis, many refugees from Nazi Germany who were in this country, in the United States, and who were involved as freedom riders and fighting for civil rights and for voting rights. And one can ask, where does that come from, that passion? I think part of it is that young Jews had been feeling somewhat alienated from the Jewish community and from the conventions of suburban Judaism. And the civil rights movement, Dr. King made the Exodus and Moses and the prophets central to the civil rights movement. And the African Americans involved in the civil rights movement welcomed Jews with open arms. They wanted us to be involved. And young Jews went and in many ways found their Judaism again. Think of it for my father, for example, coming from Nazi Germany, where there were Protestant theologians saying that the Old Testament was a Jewish book that should be thrown out of the Christian Bible. And then he came to this country, and there was Dr. King quoting the prophets. And by the way, if you look at Dr. King's major speeches, he doesn't talk about Jesus. He doesn't make this an exclusively Christian event, the civil rights movement. And that openness, that embrace of Jews meant so much to my father.
If it hadn't been for the attention paid by black activists in the South to, like, the Old Testament, to Moses, to the things Jews hold dear, do you think Jews would have gotten involved, you know, just to protest the way blacks were being treated as lessened citizens, not because blacks seemed inclined to have this connection to the Old Testament and to Judaism?
Well, let's keep in mind that this is a long tradition in the United States. That is, Jews came to the United States at the turn of the century from Russia, very poor. They read and they spoke Yiddish. They were just barely learning English. And there were Yiddish newspapers that would report in screaming headlines that there were pogroms, not just in Russia, which they had fled, but here in the United States. And what did they mean? Lynchings. Lynchings of black Americans. And they called them pogroms, and Jews were outraged by that. How can that be? Russia is one thing, but in the United States? So there's a long tradition of this, of rabbis speaking out, for example, against segregation.
You were lucky to grow up surrounded by people who many people consider today heroes. Did they seem like that to you when you were a kid, when you were a teenager? And what do you think is the one thing you learned from watching them?
They did seem like heroes. And what was so important to me was that the political issues that were debated in my home all the time by my father and by colleagues of his who came to our home, those weren't simply political issues. In fact, they were framed as moral issues. These are moral concerns. Racism is a moral concern, a religious concern. And that's a lesson that I took. I also have to say that I fell into a state of inspiration when I heard Dr. King speak. I was moved to tears.
How old were you at the time?
from the time I was a little girl until I was through high school, but I still listened to his voice and recordings. To me, it was inspiring because I thought, isn't it remarkable what a human being can become? That a person could become a Martin Luther King, a voice like that, who could, in fact, affect social change through nonviolence, who could soften hardened hearts, who could give us a new sense of the Bible and make us proud of our heritage. That was amazing to me. And that is one of the reasons I became a professor of religion. And I'm deeply grateful. I have to tell you also that I met Dr. King a few times, and he was always so gentle and kind and friendly to me. I think about that often, that there were times at the end of lectures when I'm sure he was tired and just wanted to relax, and yet he was so generous and sweet to me. And so was Mrs. King and the King children. So that also is something that means a great deal. How to be a human being, how to be a mensch in this world.
How did specifically Martin Luther King, how was he specifically a mensch to you when you were a girl? Like, is there one thing you remember?
Sure. So just 10 days, actually, before Dr. King was assassinated, he came to speak at a convention of rabbis who were honoring my father. And after dinner, everybody went into the auditorium, rabbis and their wives and teachers. And then Dr. King came into the room, and everybody stood up and linked arms and sang, "We Shall Overcome" in Hebrew. Wow. And Dr. King was very excited. He said he'd heard "We Shall Overcome" all over the world in many languages, but this was the first time in Hebrew. And Dr. King gave a speech, and there were questions. And when it was over, it was pretty late. And my father took me over to him, and he said, "Do you remember Susie?" And I thought, you know, why should he remember me? I'm just a child. I'm a nobody. And instead, Dr. King said, "Of course I remember Susie." And I thought that was so generous and sweet that he gave me that attention. And he turned to one of his assistants and asked him if he would entertain me while he and my father went to talk about some problems and issues. And that also was so nice, so sweet.
Of course, so, I remember Susie. What a great line to have.
And in fact, 2 weeks later was Passover, and my parents had invited Dr. and Mrs. King and their children to come to our Passover Seder because the Exodus had been so central to the civil rights movement. And so I often think, and I think perhaps your listeners might ask themselves, if Dr. King came to your Passover Seder commemorating the Exodus from Egypt, what would you talk about? Dr. King was assassinated right before Passover, so it didn't happen.
Susanna Heschel is a professor today of Jewish Studies at Dartmouth College. Great to have you on the show. Thanks.
Thank you. Good to talk to you.